Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Tim Lambert, in for Scott Lamar today. The rapid spread of the coronavirus, or COVID-19, has the world a bit on edge. What began in China 2 months ago has now been diagnosed in at least 40 countries around the world, including here in the United States. And Pennsylvania is taking precautions against the virus. Our guest today is Pennsylvania Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine. Dr. Levine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. I'm pleased to be here.
And, of course, our Transforming Health reporter, Brett Schultes, is also going to be joining the conversation. Brett, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Tim. Good morning.
And this is a chance for you to ask questions and provide comments on your thoughts on the coronavirus. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532. That number again is 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. I'll give that number again, 1-800-729-7532. And Dr. Levine, can you detail just what exactly this virus is?
Sure. So a coronavirus has its name because how it looks under an electron microscope. It looks like it has crowns. And coronaviruses are very common. Mostly coronaviruses will cause symptoms like the common cold. But there are some specific coronaviruses which seem to be have transferred to people from animals. And a previous coronavirus was SARS about 15 to 18 years ago. There was another coronavirus earlier this decade called MERS, or Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. And now we have this new novel coronavirus, COVID-19. This virus seems to have affected people in Wuhan, China. From what is called a wet market, which is a market of exotic animals, wild animals that are alive, that are then sold to people to be butchered and eaten. But when you put many different types of animals together, it is quite a stirring pot for different viruses to mutate. And it seems that is what led to the outbreak.
And who is most at risk for the virus right now?
Well, we're learning as we speak about this novel coronavirus, COVID-19. Most of the information that we have is from China, and people do not have any immune response. It's a new virus in terms of its genetic structure, and we have no natural immune response to it, and there is no vaccine to it. People most at risk are seniors. So certainly over 60, even more significantly at risk over 70 or 80, and seniors particularly with other chronic health problems such as heart disease, lung disease, etc. But it's not only seniors, and young people and middle-aged people have been at risk as well.
Can you compare how contagious COVID-19 is to, say, the flu or measles or even SARS?
Sure. So, again, we're learning more information. But currently, it seems that it is more contagious than influenza, than the flu, and certainly more contagious than SARS was. The other variable that we look at, in addition to how contagious it is how lethal it is, how many people who contract this die. And it seems to be currently, about 2% of individuals, 2 out of 100, will get a very severe illness and die. For influenza, that's 0.1%. So our current information is that it is significantly more lethal than the flu, again, particularly for seniors.
Is there anything you can compare the potential death rate to? To put it in perspective.
The death rate is not nearly as much as it would be for SARS. That was actually 10 to 12%. MERS was up to or slightly more than 30%. But I guess I would say it is about approximately 20 times more lethal than the flu with our present level of knowledge.
So moving on to how the state is preparing, what kind of communication have you had with the federal government right now?
Sure. So we have been preparing for more than a month for this COVID-19 or novel coronavirus. I do want to emphasize that we have no cases in Pennsylvania of COVID-19. So we have no cases. But we have been preparing with our bureaus of public health preparedness, as well as our bureaus of epidemiology. For the last month, we have been in operational command mode, where we have people working every day to make sure that Pennsylvania is prepared. We have been coordinating with our county and municipal health department partners, with hospitals and health systems, and we've been coordinating very much with other states and with the Center for Disease Control from the federal government. And we have many phone calls per day with the CDC to coordinate our response.
And when you talk about preparation, what does that entail?
Sure. So we want to make sure that our county and municipal health department partners are ready. We want to make sure that hospitals and health systems are ready. We do have some stores of personal protective equipment called PPEs. The federal government has much more stores of those. And we have been monitoring travelers from China according to the CDC guidelines and for the 14 days and making sure that they don't get sick. And again, we have no cases in Pennsylvania.
But you have been monitoring people who have traveled to areas where they've either been quarantined or where their cases of coronavirus have been reported.
That is correct. And we've been doing that for a month.
And Penn State Hershey Medical Center is an Ebola treatment center, and they've said that they have a plan in place for a long time that they're now revising. How will those plans differ for a facility like Penn State?
Sure. So we have been working with all of our hospitals and healthcare facilities, particularly the ones that were designated as Ebola treatment centers. But Ebola is really a completely different virus. Ebola is much less transmissible than COVID-19. COVID-19 would be transmissible like the flu. You would get it from droplets and sneezes and but then also shaking hands and other type of contact with someone who's sick. Ebola, but it's through the air, like the flu is through the air. Ebola is really only transmitted from personal touching contact or bodily fluids. It is not transmissible for the air. So where Ebola is much more lethal, it's much less transmissible. So different type of precautions would need to be taken for healthcare personnel.
And what about the everyday person going about their life and might be worried about it? What sort of precautions can they take to make sure that they are protecting themselves and their family?
Right. Well, as we have no cases in Pennsylvania, the risk for individuals going about their daily activities in Pennsylvania is still quite low. But the way that people can take precautions is the same way they would take precautions for the flu. So we want people to wash their hands. We want people to wash their hands really frequently, 20 times or more per day. If you do it right, it takes about 2 minutes to wash your hands and to do it really thoroughly. We also want people, if they can't wash their hands, to use alcohol-based hand sanitizers. It's not quite as effective, but it can be effective. And then we want people to, if they sneeze or cough, to do that into their elbow. And if they're sick, please stay home. Now, if you are sick and you have recently traveled to one of the countries which is affected by COVID-19, then please call us.
So what testing is in place in Pennsylvania right now to, if someone has the symptoms and they just want to make sure for their own peace of mind that they don't have COVID-19, what sort of testing is in place to make sure that they don't have it?
Sure. So all the testing until this week has been done by the CDC. So according to criteria that the CDC has set, we would test individuals who are sick but who have a travel history to China. So if you have a bad cold, you might be tested for the flu, but you wouldn't be tested for COVID-19. There are new criteria for testing which have been developed by the CDC, especially with now more countries experiencing outbreaks, particularly such as South Korea, Italy, and Iran. And we are will be starting testing in Pennsylvania at our state laboratory this week. So previously, the CDC has had difficulty with their testing kits, and when they sent it out to the states, they were not effective. And so they have made adjustments to those kits. And so we hope to have testing in and plan to have testing in Pennsylvania this week. So then people would send specimens to our laboratory, and we would be the two doing the testing right here in Pennsylvania. There has been discussion about what is called point-of-care testing, meaning testing at a hospital or a health system, and the FDA and the CDC has discussed that, and we're hoping for new guidance about that this week.
Of the countries where COVID-19 has surfaced, are there any lessons the state has been able to learn and glean from their responses? Is there any sort of best practices that have been set up at this point?
We are learning a lot about the virus from the outbreaks in China. And that's where most of the information about the virus is coming to us. In addition, that's where the DNA structure of the virus was developed and sent to the CDC, and that's what they're using to develop a vaccine. Unfortunately, a vaccine is probably at least a year away, so we have to do the other measures that we have been discussing. I think that there have been some effective measures in China and other countries and some lessons learned about monitoring individuals and how to take care of them.
Is there a timeline you can put on COVID-19 and a possible outbreak? I mean, how long is the state going to be sort of on that high alert level?
Well, we plan to be on high alert for the foreseeable future.
Meaning
as long as it takes,
okay.
Right? So we don't know what the natural timeline or course of this virus would be. Of course, influenza usually, I mean, we still have influenza, but by the later spring and summer, then we do not usually have a lot of cases of influenza. Some of that is in terms of us being outside more and not in closed spaces, but some of it is how the virus is impacted by warm air. We don't know how this novel coronavirus will be impacted. So we will be on preparation mode for the foreseeable future and as long as it takes.
Brett Schultes, looks like you have a question.
Sure. You know, one thing that one term the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention used, and that I think I've heard you use as well, is the idea of community spread. Mm-hmm. That is something I'm trying to wrap my head around.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, what that's going to actually look like. Can you talk a little bit, you know, and I'm also trying, as I report on this, to find that right balance where we're not unnecessarily sort of raising alarms, but we're also giving people adequate and correct preparations. So what would community spread actually look like from a public health standpoint? And then maybe you can speak to, because you mentioned the death rate, can you speak to also what we know about the transmissibility rate?
Sure. So the community spread is in contrast to spread for someone who's come from another country. So previous to the last several days, anyone in the United States that had COVID-19, and there are currently 86 cases in the United States, had obtained it because they had traveled in China, or they had been on the Diamond Princess cruise ship that had been in Japan, or in the last number of days, they had traveled from Italy, which has an outbreak. But it was travel-related. Community spread means that someone has contracted COVID-19, and we don't know how they got it, meaning that they obtained it from just their normal interactions in the community, and they did not have a travel-related case. The first community spread case was in California last week, and now we now have other community spread cases that have been identified in other states in the country. So that has started, so it'll heighten our sense of precautions and more preparedness that we need to take. In terms of its transmissibility, it is somewhat more transmissible than the flu, but not nearly as transmissible as something like measles, which is probably, you know, more transmissible than this virus.
Right. In terms, again, going back to what this would actually look like if it starts, and I know there are no cases in Pennsylvania, you have said it's almost an inevitability that we will see cases in Pennsylvania.
It is very likely that we will see cases in Pennsylvania, and the Department of Health, working with all of our state and community partners, as well as the federal government, is being prepared.
Mm-hmm. And so would we do something like, I know that we have people with coronavirus in California and Washington, Rhode Island, New York. Some of those states have done things like declare emergencies. Would we consider something like an emergency declaration? And what would that actually mean?
Sure. So one of the points that we have made with the opioid crisis is that there is no mechanism in Pennsylvania for the secretary or the governor with the secretary's advice to declare a public health emergency. That actually does not exist in Pennsylvania. And so what is left is for the governor, under certain circumstances, would have a disaster declaration. But we would need to have significant community spread and significant problems for us to discuss that with the governor. And again, we have no cases as we speak. We have asked the legislature to work on legislation that would allow the secretary or the governor to declare a public health emergency, which would be more targeted than a disaster declaration. And this is the type of issue, if it spreads in Pennsylvania, that we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, with working together with the federal government, what are sort of resources that we can get from the federal government, and what would be the funding and spending priorities? You know, what I know I've talked some with people who said they're concerned about keeping up their supply of PPE and N95 masks and things like that. What would that actually look like?
Sure. So we do get preparedness funds from several different mechanisms from the CDC, and we have used those in our preparation. But that money is not used in the response. So we will, again, we have no cases in Pennsylvania, but if we do and we have to gear up our response, then we are hoping that the administration will be successful asking Congress for money to be appropriated to the states as well as the CDC and other federal agencies for the specific response to coronavirus. And we are expecting a lot of discussion about how much money, but we are expecting Congress to appropriate that money.
And you're listening to Smart Talk on WYTF. We're talking about the coronavirus or COVID-19. We are your home for NPR News and all things regional. Again, we welcome your questions and comments. Call us at 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org, and we'll get to a couple of those comments when we return in just a minute. And you're listening to Smart Talk on WITF 89.5 and 93.3. The topic today, the coronavirus or COVID-19. And we, of course, welcome your questions and comments by calling us at 1-800-729-7532. You can also email us at smarttalk@wytf.org. Our guest today is Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, and our Transforming Health reporter, Brett Schultes. We have a couple of comments in we'd like to get to. One from John in Enola. He works as a courier taking specimens between doctors and hospital labs, and he feels he's at an increased risk to acquire the virus since he is a senior. His question, can COVID-19 be transmitted through the air without being attached to water droplets, and how long can the virus survive outside of a live host?
So there's a lot of information we don't know. Primarily, it would be transmitted through the air through respiratory droplets. Someone sneezes, someone coughs. But we don't know how long it lasts in the air. So again, measles lasts for hours in a room. Influenza much less. We don't know yet. And we don't know how long it lives on surfaces. And so that's why we want people to wash their hands really frequently, use hand sanitizer. Don't touch your face. So if you just open the doorknob, don't immediately touch your face, that would transfer it. But there's a lot that we don't know since it's a brand new virus.
And if you're opening the door, maybe have a handkerchief or something instead of just using your hand to touch doors?
I guess you could do that. I'm not sure that would be overwhelmingly effective. Okay. I think the idea would be to don't touch your face and then wash your hands.
So another question we had is, what would be a worst case scenario for the number of affected in the U.S. or Pennsylvania? And is there any high-risk demographic groups that can do anything differently than other groups?
So we don't know. The information is still coming in. Even the mortality rate, the death rate of 2%, that might actually be high, meaning it might be less than that because there might be a lot of patients who are asymptomatic that we don't know about that never get tested. So it wouldn't be useful to start to speculate about numbers. There's concern that this could be a significant public health threat to globally, to the United States and to Pennsylvania. But right now, we have no cases in Pennsylvania.
And from Twitter, Gemstone Winter writes, people need to calm down. Coronavirus is a cold. Medical journals list it as a cold. The news needs to stop politicking.
Well, so we certainly want people to remain calm. And it can be something like a routine upper respiratory infection, so it varies. It can be asymptomatic. It can be mildly symptomatic, like a cold. It can be more like a severe flu. But it seems about 5% of individuals, particularly seniors, will have a serious case, and 2%, the best we know now, could die. So it has much more of a potential to be more serious than a cold.
Now let's go to the phone lines. We have Dave from Lewisburg. Dave, welcome to Smart Talk.
Hi, I've heard your guest several times say that there's nobody in Pennsylvania that has coronavirus. I just find it to be more accurate to state that there are no reported cases of coronavirus in Pennsylvania, especially given that the guest also stated that we're starting testing in Pennsylvania this week and that the CDC has not tested anybody who has not been to one of the countries that has an outbreak, and especially given that we already have people in the U.S. who have contracted coronavirus who have not been to one of those countries. So I find it misleading to state that there are no people in Pennsylvania that have coronavirus. I understand your guest is probably trying to keep people calm, but it also raises doubt when you have misleading statements like that. And I would find it to be much more beneficial to the public to at least be accurate.
Well, thank you for your thoughts. So we have had patients that have been travelers that have been tested. It says all the tests were sent to the CDC for the test to be done, and they're negative. So the testing now, starting this week, will be done at our laboratory in Pennsylvania. But we have had tests, and those tests have all been negative. But thank you for your thoughts in terms of accuracy. We, of course, want to balance, as you mentioned, Brett, is balance being accurate to the public, but also being reassuring about the current risk in Pennsylvania. So it is certainly a balance.
And Katie from Mechanicsburg is also on the line. Katie.
Hi, Dr. Levine. My question was for you regarding what our church should do to take precautions. We have moved away from shaking hands during the sharing of the peace and are starting to use individual cups during taking the blood during communion. So I was wondering what else you would recommend without raising alarm within our church community.
Sure. Well, thank you for that. So we'll be looking to the CDC for the recommendations for all of the states for gatherings. There are no specific recommendations for churches, but I think that the measures you're taking are prudent. Washing of hands is critical, use of hand sanitizer, etc. When you touch surfaces, don't immediately touch your face. And those would be all of the recommendations now, unless someone has recently traveled from an at-risk area. So, there are specific travel guidance on the CDC website. And if you go to the Department of Health website, our website will link to their travel advisory. So I would, that changes almost every day. And so I would keep abreast of those.
Before we get to another question from an email, what are the best resources for people to check out, first of all?
So I think the best resources for our people are our website, the Department of Health website, as well as the CDC website. And those are kept up to date and have the most accurate information. I would be very cautious about information on social media. We know how that can be extremely challenging, and misinformation could even potentially dangerous during this time. So keep looking to our website and the CDC website.
And Kevin asked, what role, if any, does the handling of money play in the transmission of COVID-19?
Well, so if someone had COVID-19 and they are using cash and someone else handles that cash, then in theory, the virus could be transmitted. We don't really know how much it is transmitted by those type of materials. Again, doorknobs and handles and books and tables and things, we don't really know. So that's why hand washing and hand sanitizer is the way to go.
And Dan from Mechanicsburg has emailed us. He is asking that you mention the possibility for the need for funds from Washington, and he'd like to know why are the funds necessary and what would they be used for?
Sure. So it is going to be critically important that the federal government approve funds for more funding for the CDC, more funding for Health and Human Services and other related agencies, and then funding for state, local, and municipal health departments. So our funding is used in a lot of different ways. We have specific supplies and equipment that we use. We'll be incurring significant staff time and overtime, with the 7-day-a-week staffing that we have, as well as all the other county municipal health departments. And then other supplies and equipment will be necessary. We'll be doing media campaigns purchasing the personal protective equipment, etc. Hospitals and health systems might require certainly PPEs. They'll also have significant staff time if necessary, perhaps even more, oxygen set up, more ventilators and things like that. So all of that money will be used to help prevent the spread of coronavirus, but also mitigate when we do see cases.
Oh, sure.
Brett?
Well, I'm just thinking that for so many people, they're going to be hearing all this, and it's always going to come back to that question just of what should I be doing and what should I be worried about or not worried about? I was in Wegmans last weekend, and it's just packed full of people buying black beans and cannellini beans and rice, and I just have to wonder if in 6 months you're going to have a whole lot of people trying to figure out what to do with all that stuff.
Well, I would take the same precautions that we take for other potential emergencies, right? People are used to what would happen if there was a big snowstorm or if there was a flood. So I don't think you need 6 months worth of canned beans, but we want people to know how to contact their family members. We want people to know to have their medications, to have at least 2 weeks of medications available at their home. We want people to have adequate food and resources, but you don't have to store up for months. So the same type of precautions we're used to taking if there was a big snowstorm. Now I'm knocking wood that we don't actually get any more snowstorms. Because of the beautiful weather today. But those type of precautions, I think, are prudent, but you don't need to store up for 6 months.
What about like social isolation? I mean, that's it's effective in not getting diseases like this or viruses like this, but is that going to be, could we see like schools closing down and things like that?
Well, as was discussed, we have no current documented cases of coronavirus in Pennsylvania, but other states are seeing a larger number of cases, particularly in the West Coast, Washington, California, etc. And so, depending upon the circumstances in those areas, there might be local social distancing that would be recommended. Mm. So that would include potentially closing schools or closing large businesses different types of gatherings and events. And those can be done if necessary, but it's not necessary in Pennsylvania at this time.
And that sort of segues into Cynthia's question. Cynthia's from Hershey. If any area is quarantined, will public water and sewers still be available? And will there still be people at the water company if they want to call to get it turned on or off?
So there is no indication that it would be spread through to municipal water and sewer. So all of those services would continue. And I'm sure that all local and state and federal governmental services will continue to support the public. And we all have plans for that. We have what are called COOP plans, that how do we maintain services if you couldn't go to a specific area or government? And there are continuation plans.
So another comment comes from someone who takes the train and subway to Philadelphia daily for work and notes there are often people with cold, sneezing, and coughing, most often not using common courtesy as regards to others on the train or subway. What's the best way to stay healthy given this new health challenge? Mm-hmm.
We have been in contact with SEPTA. We'll be in contact with Amtrak, et cetera, in terms of preparations if there is community spread in Pennsylvania. Mm. I think people just need to take precautions in terms of their hand washing, in terms of surfaces. If there does seem to be community spread, to in terms of how far away they are from potentially from people and not necessarily trying to overcrowd, and just do the very best they can to protect themselves. But we'll have specific guidance for public transit if that is necessary.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I would just also wonder about, you know, if this does end up having a high rate of spread and a lot of, I mean, we can, I'm hesitant to extrapolate those numbers too much, especially the 2% death rate, given that we don't totally know how it'll play out here. I will say, though, it makes me wonder how resources such as, you know, health system resources, like things like ventilators, would be affected by, you know, if we're going to have, start running out of equipment. And also, you know, help people who work at hospitals would be at risk of getting this as well.
Sure. So that is an important point. So it'll be critically important for healthcare personnel to take precautions. Healthcare personnel have been at risk, particularly in China, but in some other countries. And so our healthcare personnel are trained about how to use personal protective equipment and will need to take proper precautions. And we have excellent hospitals and health systems that we work with that do get funding from the federal government to be prepared. But if there was an extremely serious outbreak in any specific area with significant community spread, then resources would be challenging. So that's what we're doing now every day to work with all of our partners to be prepared for any eventuality.
We have a call from Faith in Lancaster. Good morning, Faith. Thanks for calling into Smart Talk.
Good morning. Thank you. Those of us who are at extra risk because of underlying lung issues, are there any other recommendations other than the typical wash your hands and be away from potential carriers? And I'll hang up and Dr. Levine can answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Faith.
Thank you so much. It's a very important question. There's no other specific measures that someone who's a senior or someone who has particular health problems to take. They should just be extra vigilant in terms of the precautions that we already spoke about.
And do you have any concerns about a virus-linked drug shortage, since a lot of parts of the drugs or most of the drugs that come into our country are made in China? Do you have any concern about that?
There are concerns about drug shortages. For example, with the hurricane in Puerto Rico, because normal saline, which is sterile salt water used for IV fluids, was made in Puerto Rico, there was a shortage. And so there are concerns about potential medication drug shortages because of the production issues and supply chains. So that'll be something that Pennsylvania, working with the federal government, will need to address.
How important is it for people to, once they start to feel like they get a cold, to treat themselves quickly or to see a doctor quickly? And is there a way to sort of head that COVID-19 off if you seek treatment sooner rather than later?
Sure. So there is no specific treatment for COVID-19. There have been some medication trials that have been done in other countries, and I know the NIH has been involved with those with the antiviral medications to see if different combinations could be effective, but nothing that's standard of care. So there is no specific treatment for COVID-19, and there's no vaccine for COVID-19, although they're working on both. If you have a common cold, then there's no magic medicine for that, right? You used to say as a physician, if you treat it, it'll last 7 days, and if you don't treat it, it'll last a week. So there's no specific medications that's going to fix that. If you feel that you are very ill, particularly with fever, shortness of breath, etc., then you should call your doctor.
And Kathy just emailed, would a pneumonia vaccination be recommended for a healthy 68-year-old as a precaution?
So the pneumonia vaccine is recommended anyway for a healthy 68-year-old. And some of the very serious illnesses have been superinfections or co-infections with a bacteria, such as that bacteria that causes pneumonia, that could lead someone to get very, very sick. So it would not prevent COVID-19, but it could, in theory, prevent a complication from getting something like COVID-19 or influenza.
And Dr. Rachel Levine, Secretary of Health for the state of Pennsylvania, we're going to wrap up this segment. Is there anything else you'd like to add to the conversation that we didn't cover at all today?
I just want to reassure people that I have personally updated the governor and the governor's cabinet. I have spoken with our legislature several times. I've spoken with our federal partners as well. Pennsylvania is working and doing everything we can to prepare if there is community spread of COVID-19 in Pennsylvania.
Thank you for making yourself available today.
Thank you.
And Brett Schultes, our Transforming Health reporter, thank you so much for sitting in on this as well.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF 89.5 and 93.3, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Tim Lambert, in for Scott Lamar today. Welcome back to Smart Talk on WITF. U.S. financial markets dropped last week more than any time since the Great Recession in 2008 due to fears the coronavirus, or COVID-19, was having a negative impact on the global economy. Will the coronavirus continue to slow growth, and will it actually affect your finances? Dan I, chartered financial analyst and head of asset allocation and equity research at Roof Advisory Group, is joining us now. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Tim.
Thanks so much for being here.
It's nice to be with you.
And as a note of disclosure, I am a client of Roof Advisory Group, so I want to make sure that that is out in the open as well. We welcome your questions and comments by calling us at 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. And you can also leave a comment on our Facebook page or on Twitter. We're at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Now, Forbes is reporting that last week marked the worst week for global stocks since the financial crisis. We're talking 5 trillion with a T wiped off the markets over fears about the coronavirus that could become a pandemic as it spread to Europe, the Middle East, Latin America, and Africa. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 14% from its peak earlier in the month. So I think the thing most people are worried about is, what is your advice to people who are looking at their investments or not looking at their investments right now?
Right. So first, I would say our advice is, you know, don't panic. Okay. It's really easy to make mistakes in this type of environment, and those mistakes can really have long lasting implications. Also, you know, very painful week last week, as you mentioned. But if we look at this in the context of history, it's really nothing new. If we look back over the last, you know, 40 years, the average intra-year decline for the S&P 500 has been 14%. So, you know, while the equity markets have done very well and obviously created a tremendous amount of wealth for investors, there is a price of admission for those types of returns, and it's really living through those types of environments like we're seeing now.
The word correction has been thrown around a lot in the past few days. What does that mean?
So a correction technically is when a market index declines by 10% or more from its previous high. So as we saw last week, markets around the globe, you know, did move into technical correction territory.
So how do you see things playing out over the next week or two in terms of how the markets are going to react to sort of this global uncertainty Yes. around COVID-19?
So I would say, you know, we probably need to take a little bit of a step back. And if we look from the beginning of January through the middle of February, the S&P advanced by 40%, almost in a straight line. You know, that's not a normal outcome. And we were, you know, fairly concerned coming into 2020 because of, you know, elevated valuations. Stocks were expensive, trading at significantly above, you know, long-term historical averages. And, you know, investor sentiment got overly bullish. Positioning was stretched. And we think all of those excesses are in the process of being worked off as we speak, worked off in pretty quick order last week. There may be some more to go. But we do think that we saw some signs of, you know, indiscriminate, you know, panic selling last week at the end of last week. And those are traditionally, you know, characteristics or traits that we see around market bottoms. So certainly not here to call a bottom, but in the past it has been, you know, beneficial to, you know, push a little bit into the equity markets when you tend to see those types of reactions from investors. And that's what we've been doing.
Is there a point where people should be concerned? At what point would that be where all of a sudden you have to step back and say, oh, I really have to kind of pay attention to my investments at this point?
So I think the real concern is that we see a response from the consumer maybe similar to what we saw after 9/11, where we see this, you know, nesting behavior. They stay indoors. They don't go out to eat. They don't go shopping. They don't go to the mall. I think one of your previous guests had mentioned, you know, social isolation, and that would be a very big negative for the global economy, for the U.S. economy. But I would stress that, you know, we've seen these types of events before. You know, we've been through SARS, we've been through MERS, we've been through the bird flu, Ebola, et cetera. And that consumer behavior, you know, always moved back to trend shortly thereafter. We saw a pretty significant decline in economic activity, but a V-shaped recovery back to the previous trend. And that's what we're expecting to see here, too.
So is there any way that lessons from those previous examples you mentioned that can be applied to what's happening now? Have there been, you know, cases where you looked at it and said, oh, yeah, we're seeing the same sort of trends from this particular case or world event that we can take a look at and apply that to now?
Absolutely. And we have taken a look at you know, the market reactions from those previous outbreaks that I mentioned. And we're seeing, you know, exactly what we're seeing in the current environment, you know, a pretty sharp and dramatic decline in equity markets. But when we look out 3 and 6 months later, they've traded at dramatically higher levels.
We have an email question. Is this a good time to talk about how much risk an investor should be willing to take?
Absolutely. You know, we are big believers in a balanced portfolio approach and having an investment plan and an investment strategy and making sure that strategy and that plan is in line with a client's, you know, long-term return objectives and risk tolerance. So absolutely, if you don't have a plan, you should certainly be developing one.
What is the impact on key industries of this sort of outbreak right now? Manufacturing, you have supply chains, transportation, obviously. We're seeing countries sort of scaling back or keeping a close eye on people traveling from areas where the coronavirus has popped up. The travel industry itself with airlines and cruises and tourism, you know, how is that going to impact the markets when it comes to these really key industries
for the
economy?
Yes. And we have seen a disproportionate response in markets, you know, pointed towards travel and leisure stocks. You know, some of those were down 20 to 40% last week, so have really been, you know, taking the brunt of the sell off. I think what investors need to consider, though, is that, you know, if you have a long term time horizon, 10, 20, 30 years, is this an event that is going to change your long term view? Is this an event that's really going to change the long term structure of the global and the U.S. economy? You know, we don't think it will. So, you know, it does look like an opportunity to take a look at, you know, some of the stocks or some of the investments that you kind of had your eye on, but you were a bit concerned with valuation levels. You know, stocks have gotten significantly, you know, cheaper over the last week and a half. We're now trading back to kind of historic valuation levels. That premium has been worked out of the market. So investors should really be focused on, you know, what your timeline is and you know, why you're buying stocks. Is it for the next week or quarter, or is it for the long term?
And we have a comment, an observation from one listener. Warren Buffett on Monday urged investors not to overreact, but if the coronavirus has you worrying about all the stock funds in your investment portfolio, financial professionals say the problem may not be the coronavirus. It may be all the stock funds in your portfolio. So what are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. It's a good point. And I think it's back to my comment about, you know, investor sentiment really getting, you know, over their skis a bit. Investors were too bullish. And when we see that type of scenario, or when we've seen it in the past, you know, too many people on one side of the boat, it tends to flip over, and you have these type of corrections. So, you know, investors should have a good long-term asset allocation plan and strategy in place. And when you see situations where, you know, the stock market rises 40% in 13 months or so, maybe it's time to do a little bit of rebalancing and you know, bring down your exposure to equities and increase it in lower risk asset classes.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. Dan Ai is a chartered financial analyst and head of asset allocation and equity research at Roof Advisory Group. We are welcoming your questions and comments about taking a look at your stock portfolio, your 401k, how to react to what the markets have done in the wake of the coronavirus. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or email us at smarttalk@witf.org. European banks and Asian nations like Japan say they will provide ample liquidity and ensure financial stability in their markets. So can you break that down into everyday conversational speech?
So what we've seen so far, especially from China, is more stimulus efforts. They are lowering interest rates. They are lowering tax rates. They are pumping liquidity into their financial markets to help cushion against the decline they're seeing in economic activity and in financial markets. We've heard from the European central banks that they're willing to lower interest rates further, and markets are now pricing in that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates three times in 2020. Our question would be: is how much would that help solve this problem? Interest rates in Europe and Japan are already negative and very low in the U.S. And so being at those levels, you have to ask yourself whether, an additional cut or two will help, stimulate demand. And is the issue, really demand driven? If there's problems with supply change and finished intermediary goods, is lower interest rates going to help solve that problem? Are lower interest rates going to help spur travelers to go to Italy or to China? No, that's not the solution for it. But at the same time, it certainly might help, calm equity investors. And I think we've all seen over the last decade how equity markets have reacted to lower interest rates and to global stimulus.
So do you see the U.S. making kind of the same promises or the Federal Reserve responding in any way?
Yes, and right now the
yes to both, or yes,
yes to both. I would say right now, market is pricing in a 100% probability that the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates at their March 18th meeting.
So, how does this compare to what happened in 2008? Is there any way to compare the circumstances, or are they differing in any way?
I think they're different in a lot of ways. I mean, we had very real systemic risk in our financial markets in 2008. We certainly do not see that in the current environment. We think that our banks have very strong balance sheets. They're very well capitalized. The U.S. consumer is in very good shape. They're seeing significant wage growth. Unemployment levels are the lowest in 50 years. The consumer is carrying less leverage than they have over the last 40 years. So we certainly don't see that type of backdrop that we saw in 2008, 2009. I frankly don't even think that they're comparable.
And we have another email question. How long do you believe this level of volatility will last? Could this cause a global recession or depression?
Yeah. So what I would say is, obviously we don't know how long the elevated volatility will last. What we have seen on Friday especially is such a spike in volatility levels that it corresponds with other market bottoms in 2015 and 2018. So we will have to keep an eye on that, but typically these elevated volatility levels haven't been able to stay in place for weeks or months. As far as a global recession, we think that China will certainly bear the brunt of the coronavirus. There are expectations out there that their economy was slow from 6 or 7% GDP growth in the first quarter down to something like 2%. That's certainly a big hit, and China is a much larger player in terms of world GDP than they were back in 2003 when the SARS outbreak occurred. But our baseline view is that we do feel some pressure in the U.S. We may nick U.S. GDP by a percent or two, but we do not see a U.S. recession or a global recession.
in 60 seconds or less for this last email question from someone who doesn't invest. How does this impact me or my or the economy?
So
it kind of gets to the heart of it.
It gets to the heart of it, right. So I think the bottom line is that we think that this is a short-term event and not one that changes the structure of the U.S. or the global economy. So our view is that investors should move forward and maintain the investment plan that they've set up.
Dan I, chartered financial analyst and head of asset allocation and equity research at Roof Advisory Group. Thank you very much for your insights and for joining us on Smart Talk today.
Nice to be with you.
And that's going to wrap up Smart Talk on WITF 89.5 and 93.3. Just a reminder, if you have any questions that you'd like answered, you can email them to us at smarttalk.org. And you can also email them to us on Twitter. We're at Smart Talk WITF. I'm Tim Lambert. Thank you so much for listening today.